Okay, guys, part two for our study of Islamic history, looking at really the chain of events that has led up to today, as Dr. Riddell has demonstrated in his first episode, and we'll talk more about today, that we can't just take one link out of a chain and look at it in isolation in hopes to understand the entire chain. We need to look at what happens before and after, and it's a good episode. Hope you guys enjoy it. And again, this is part two, so if you haven't heard part one, you can go back and listen to that episode or just start in the middle.
Whichever you prefer.
Yeah, nothing wrong with starting a book in the middle. That's fun to do on occasion.
What? Go back to part one and listen to that, and then check back here.
You could even start this show in the middle, just fast forward.
All right. Thanks.
Well, once again, Muslim terrorists.
A terrorist
slaughtered innocent
Islamic
people.
Extremists now control
terrorists.
Much of the country.
The rise
their brand of
Islam
justice
Nazism.
Is brutal and deadly.
Newsflash, America. These Muslim extremists are alive and well. They are not dead. And their video is not gratuitous. And it certainly is not irrelevant. It is a warning.
Welcome to the Truth About Muslims podcast, the official podcast of the Zwemer Center for Muslim Studies, where we help to educate you beyond the media. Here are your hosts, Howard and Trevor.
How helpful is it when people kind of make up their mind about the history of a religion before having even met somebody from that religion? Because I find that that's typically the case, is that people kind of have their minds made up about the history of Islam and the history of Muhammad and the revelations and sort of the development of the history of Muslims, Christians, and Jews. And then you realize they've never actually even met a Muslim. Is that helpful? I mean, would you discourage people from sort of making up their minds about what's going on historically? Or do you like the idea of dealing with, you know, some of the history in line with also some relationships with modern day Muslims that believe different things?
Yeah. I mean, in a sense, I have a vested interest because I'm a historian, but this is where I think it's important for people to study Islam. If they're going to be meeting Muslims and, you know, engaging with Muslims, I think it's important that they know something about Islam, its theology, its doctrine, its history. These are all door openers, really. They're bridges to engaging with Muslims. So I think it's important that people do know something and not make up their minds based on the odd passing comment that they might see in a newspaper article somewhere that's usually written by a journalist who's pulled it together in 2 hours of quick research on the internet.
Yeah, Wikipedia.
Hey ladies, I'm from Truth About Muslims podcast. Have you heard of it?
Yeah.
Okay. So we want you to read an ad for us. Can you do that? You'll be famous, like world famous. It'll be amazing.
CIU.
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 I'm Kevin Kakaisen.
Kevin.
Yeah,
Ward.
Oh wow. Nice. He just
Luke Fain. Luke Fain.
Luke. All right.
CIU educates people from a biblical worldview to impact the nations with the message of Christ.
You want to read that again? You're like, I'll be so embarrassed if I get out there.
Before we get into the Crusades, right? Because obviously we're going to probably have to talk about that a little bit. But what other, Trevor, you said turning points? Turning points were bringing the tension, you know, to a boiling point before the Crusades. What other things were there?
Yeah, well, when we study Western history, mm-hmm. European history, we study the great empires. You know, obviously we study Rome, we study what came after Rome, the Eastern Roman Empire, Byzantium and so forth. We study the Dark Ages, we study the Age of Colonization and so forth. And what you find is that if you study Islam in the same way, the great Islamic empires, actually the interaction between the great Christian periods and the great Islamic periods was quite noticeable, and that shaped relationships at that time. So, for example, following Muhammad, there was a period of Islamic leaders that really expanded the Islamic empire. So there was an initial empire that lasted for 100 years. That was a kind of age of expansion, and it expanded in interaction with the Christian world at the time, often military interaction between the two. Then there was another empire that followed, the Great Abbasid Empire, that was a kind of period of flowering of the arts and imperial grandeur and so forth and building. That's worth studying. Again, it was interacting with Christians all the way through. So I would be advising students who are interested in history to study the moments. First, be aware of, in general terms, of the great empires, but then be asking the question, how did they interact with Christians? And in terms of today, how does that influence the relationship today? Because one of For me, when I teach history to my students, I never simply teach history in terms of dates and events. I'm always asking the question, this event happened, how does that impact the relationship today? How did that feed into the developing Christian-Muslim relationship? Because I firmly believe that Christian-Muslim interaction in the 21st century is the child of centuries of interaction between the two faiths. Therefore, we need to understand something about those centuries of interaction in order to really get a handle on what's going on today.
So it sounds like you're saying everything didn't start on 9/11.
Quite funny about that, yeah.
It's a little further back. You mentioned that first empire. Give us some ideas about where these empires spread. That first sort of Islamic movement goes where?
So with the death of Muhammad in 632, there was a period of about 30 years when there were a series of leaders, and that first 30 years was really important for the growth of Islam. So Islam moved out of the Arabian Peninsula. It spread into current present-day Iraq and Syria. Damascus, which was a great Christian city, fell to Muslims. So did Jerusalem. Islam expanded into Egypt during this period, and it also expanded into Persia, which was a different religion, Zoroastrian at the time. So those first 30 years were very important for the expansion of Islam.
Looking at that, I mean, it's got to shock a lot of people, though, because this is really the cradle of Christianity at this point. So how do you look at that from a historical perspective, that the cradle of the Christian faith within 30 years after the death of Muhammad essentially changes to an Islamic empire?
Mm. Well, that's left a legacy among both Muslims and Christians. It's important to understand that one of the reasons, a key reason, I think, that Islam was so successful in expanding in that early period was that the Eastern Christian Empire and the Persian Empire had been fighting each other for hundreds of years, and they were exhausted. So the two great empires of the region had exhausted themselves fighting each other. So in comes Islam as a new force, and they encountered very brittle resistance. So they expanded very rapidly. They were fired up by new enthusiasm about their faith. So that initial period was crucial. But of course, the loss of Jerusalem, the loss of Damascus, that left a legacy of bitterness among Christians, and that was the first stage on the lead-up to the Crusades and onwards. So in a sense, relationships are being formed in that very early period, relations based on conflict and conquest and so forth.
I think what's interesting, because Islam, the Islamic empires were based so much about their faith, that they didn't fade like other empires would have. Right. So like you have a Roman Empire, which wasn't really based on faith. It was, you know, very militaristic, powerful. And I know that Islam has had that kind of history as well. But it seems like the Christendom and this Islamic Empire just continually were swelling. Right. And competing, fighting on the edges and trading, too. Right.
Mm.
And that just continued on and on and on and on. So even though there were empires that were falling, right, the Islamic regions of the world still stayed Islamic, right? And then Christendom and the West, or more of the West, I guess, still stayed. So I'm just wondering, is that what had really built up the bitterness over the years? Whereas in maybe like Romans and the Germanic tribes, there's no bitterness between Romans and Germanic tribes today, because they just don't exist. Where you have Christendom and you have Islam still here, would that be a contributor to this buildup?
Yes, well, in the contest between the Islamic empires and Christendom, you have a contest in all different sorts of ways. It's a contest for power, it's a contest for territory, it's a contest for religious belief.
Mm.
And, you know, Rome and the Germanic tribes, no longer have a contest for religious belief, because the whole area eventually became Christianized.
Right.
Whereas in the case of Islam and Christianity, the territories that distinguished them were also marked by religious differences, which we find today. So that's a kind of ongoing basis of rivalry. Islamic empires, the territory that was that became Islamic through expansion and conquest had reached its maximum point virtually pretty much by about 750 AD.
Wow, that's soon after.
Yeah, right. There were some subsequent expansions, but nevertheless, that period of 120 years was essential for Islam's expansion to its furthest point. And subsequent to that that area of land did pass from empire to empire within the Islamic, in Islamic
right,
terms.
Faith, right.
Different Islamic empires. Some came, some went. So you found some empires rose, some fell, but it remained Islamic. And that's the thing. Once that area of land has become Islamic, it's not ceased to be so, except for the period of the Crusades and more recently.
Yeah, and I think that we have to take into consideration that there are many Christians that would look at the rapid expansion of the church in the first century, and that would be a great testimony to the validity of their faith. Muslims have the same sort of testimony. Many Muslims I've talked to have used that as sort of a test for the authenticity of Islam, is look how quickly this spread.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a very common idea among Muslims, that their view is that God blessed Islam, which is why it expanded as it did. Which is interesting for later history, because when Islam had periods of decline, Muslims then asked the question, why has God stopped blessing us? And the answer has typically been, because we were bad Muslims, so we need to get back to the original kind of faith, which tends to be more a literalist kind of faith.
And we see that in Christian circles as well in the past. I just hear like these stories from church history, I think I remember, where Muslims would come and conquer a town and they would all convert to Islam. And then that town that used to be Christian is no longer Christian, or that region was Christian, is no longer Christian, was wiped out. So it's interesting.
Well, I think, you know, there is like that shift towards fundamentalism, in a sense that we've abandoned the faith and we need to go back to the true, you know, and there's that narrative that exists in a lot of countries, our own country included, in a lot of historic Christian areas. But a lot of people aren't aware that going to Spain today, that you'll see a lot of mosque and a lot of architecture that is directly related to that early Islamic empire, and then all the way up into Baghdad, the next empire. That, talk to us a little bit about the so-called golden age of Islam that seems to be another huge turning point.
Yes, well, after the fall of the empire of expansion, they were called the Umayyads, and they lasted until 750 AD. That was a period really of military expansion. You then had 500 years of empires, where a number of empires and sub-empires in the Islamic world, where the arts flourished, where the sciences flourished. There was a lot of translation of Greek works. There was a period of stability, relative stability, especially in the 800s. And during that period, sometimes Christians and Jews rose to positions of prominence in the administration of the empire. That was that particular empire called the Abbasid Empire. It was based on Baghdad. Meanwhile, over in Spain, another empire was flourishing. So in the 800s, you had a kind of glory period. One empire based in Baghdad, one empire based in Spain, and this was the period, of course, when the European areas had entered the Dark Ages. There was a massive decline. So this was definitely the period of Islamic rise and glory, and European decline. And if you think of history as a series of waves, what you often tend to find is that as the wave of Islam rose, the wave of European Christianity declined, and as one rose, then later on you find that the Europeans rose through colonialism, and at a time that the Islamic wave had declined as well. So it tends to be a sort of balancing kind of wave to some extent.
So that for me, it begs the question: today, are we in decline? It depends on who you ask. Christians are in decline, or are we on our way up? You know, some really hopeful missiologists are like, we're doing it, we're finishing the job, you know, we're finishing the task. But then a lot of scared Americans, you know, like, what would you say? Is Islam in decline, or who is
riding the wave?
Yeah, who's rising?
Yeah, well, you know, since 1900, Muslim sort of reformist kinds of writers have been asking the question again, why are we colonized? Because in 1900, much of the Muslim world was under the colonial control of non-Muslim powers. So they asked the question, why is that? And the answer was, we've been bad Muslims. Therefore, many Muslim groups have tried to revive Islam by going back to what they consider to be the basics, and we are still seeing that process today. So groups that you see, whether it's the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, which tend to be, you know, they're non-jihadi, or some of the jihadi groups, the message is we need to get back to the basics in Islam and implement Islamic Sharia law, and that will help Islam rise, go up the wave again. What about the West? Is the West rising or declining? Well, you know, we can discuss that among ourselves.
All right, so this show wouldn't be possible without sponsors.
And at this point in the show is where, if you want to partner with us, we would put your ad. So if you want to be a part of the show, you want to partner with us.
You like what we're doing.
You want to be on our team, what have you.
Bring this show to the world.
Then email us and let us know.
I'm curious, even before the 1900, before colonialism, pre-colonialism, we have the Crusades, which is a little bit where we started the conversation. How was the response from the Muslim world going from this golden age, this sort of Pax Romana, I don't know what the Islamic term would be for this sort of peaceful reign where they're flourishing in art and they're flourishing in medicine and science and astronomy, and you know, we've heard so many different things that were coming out of this period in Baghdad, and what was the response when what comes next is essentially the Crusades?
Well, yeah, in a sense, what we're seeing is what history has shown about every empire. From the death of Muhammad to 632 until about 1100 AD, Islam had been going through a period of great flourishing, great success, but then the decline set in inevitably. So in the 900s, the Islamic Empire and empires, they were declining. So by the time that the Crusades happened, the Islamic empires were brittle. They had declined considerably. There was a certain amount of decadence in certain kinds of ways. And so they were vulnerable to attack from other areas. The Crusades, they represent a kind of counterattack in a sense, a counterattack after 450 years of Muslim expansion. So from the death of Muhammad, there had been this expansion. Christianity had been in retreat. So the Crusades that started in 1095, 1096 represented a kind of counterattack at a time that the Islamic empires had declined. And so the Crusades were successful in setting up a series of little kingdoms in around the area of present-day Israel, Lebanon, and so forth. As Islam was declining and it was facing a lot of pressure in that way, it was also beginning to face pressures from other parts of the world that eventually led on to the great Mongol invasions of the 1200s. So Muslims look back to the Crusades as with bitterness as an event, a series of events that brought about huge loss among the Islamic nations. But of course, getting back to my original point, you can't measure the Christian-Muslim problem from that period because there had already been 450 years of Christian-Muslim conflict and rivalry before the Crusades. So that's why, for me, the Crusades are a link in the chain of history.
So in the Dark Ages, was there much interaction between Muslims and Christian, like in trade or anything? It just seems like what the picture that you painted, Islam was flourishing, kind of like the Renaissance, you know, for the West. So it made me think that the Christians were just kind of in their caves.
Yeah,
or the Christians were in their monasteries, you know, just hiding.
Yeah, yeah. No, there wasn't. There was certainly interaction. We have to remember that during that period, there were still lots of Christians living under Islamic rule in the Middle East.
Okay, I didn't think about that.
And during the period of Islamic greatness, some of those Christians rose to positions of prominence in the Islamic empires. So there was Christian-Muslim interaction there within the world of Islam. But in addition, there was continuing Christian-Muslim interaction beyond the borders as well. There were, for example, ongoing pilgrimages by Christian groups coming from Europe, going down to Jerusalem to visit the holy sites. There was trade going on, of course. It was going on. Christian-Muslim interaction was happening in different ways.
So what was the initial spark that started the Crusades?
Well, there had been... It was a new Muslim group who came on the scene, actually. When you think of the Middle East, you think of a number of different major people groups, You think of the Arabs, you think of the Persians, you think of the Turks. And it was really the arrival of the Turks around 1000 AD that represented a whole new element in the Islamic equation. As the Islamic empires were declining, this new group of people arrived, and the Turks started to assert themselves within the world of Islam, and they also started to push into present-day Turkey. So present-day Turkey, that had originally been Christian, of course, as we know from the Bible. So the arrival of the Turks meant that there was increasing conflict between Christians in the Byzantine Empire and the newly arriving Turks. There was a big battle in 1071 in eastern Turkey, where the Christian armies of the Byzantines was heavily defeated. And that defeat meant that more pressure was being applied on the eastern Christian city of Constantinople. And so the ruler of Constantinople, the emperor of Constantinople, turned to the Pope in Rome and asked for help, asked for assistance to face up to the new Islamic threat of the Turks. And that 25 years later, they gathered together an army and they then responded to this new threat, the new threat of the Turks.
All right, that was Peter Riddell. As always, he's masterful in his intellect and his content. This one was pretty exciting because it's building up the conflict between Muslims and Christian relations, which is a lot of what we're living in today, right, Trevor?
Right. Well, I mean, it's good to realize that this isn't anything new. We tend to view the world through, you know, our own experience and forget that there's a history there. So we've got, 1,400 years of ongoing tension, not always tension, sometimes good relationships, sometimes poor relationships, and it's good to hear him sort of outline the ebb and flow, and I'm looking forward to next week where we really break this down into, so how did this all come about and what we see today.
Right, and we need to know what to do with it, so this is history at its finest.
Yeah, look forward to part 3 next week.
Yep, so come back.